It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. G7 summit puts pressure on Russia over Ukraine. Russia's aggression in Ukraine was a focus of talks between President Obama and German Chancellor Angela Merkel at the G7 summit in the Bavarian Alps. VOA's Luis Ramirez reports.
In the two leaders' meeting, talks focused largely on how to move forward after a year of sanctions has failed to stop Russia's channeling of weapons and personnel to separatist rebels in eastern Ukraine. With those sanctions set to expire in the next 2 months and violence flaring once again in Ukraine, President Obama is trying to get European leaders to agree on extending them. U.S. officials say Mr. Obama and Ms. Merkel agreed that an extension of sanctions should be clearly linked to Russia's full implementation of its agreements to withdraw from Ukraine and respect its sovereignty. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the G7 summit in Germany.
The G7 consists of the United States, Germany, Britain, France, Italy, Canada, and Japan. Turkey's ruling party lost its absolute majority in parliament Sunday in a stunning electoral defeat for President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's bid to rewrite the country's constitution to create a presidential democracy that would expand his powers. Mr. Erdogan had been seeking a two-thirds majority in a 550-seat parliament to create a presidential republic. With virtually all votes tallied, unofficial results show his Islamic-rooted Justice and Development Party winning 41% of the vote, down from almost 50% 4 years ago. An international flotilla rescued almost 6,000 migrants from rickety boats in the Mediterranean over the weekend, with a total of mostly Middle Eastern and African migrants seeking a better life in Europe, approaching this year 50,000. The tide of migrants are escaping poverty, persecution, and conflict. This is VOA News. Iraqi forces advanced in the oil refinery town of Baiji on Sunday in a bid to reclaim the area from Islamic State forces for the second time. Military officials say government troops gained ground in the northern city center. Baghdad took back Baiji once last year before losing it again to the militants. Islamic State fighters have targeted oil production sites in Iraq and Syria, using the revenue from sales to fund an expansionist agenda in both countries. Airstrikes by a Saudi-led coalition in the Yemeni capital killed at least 44 people, including civilians, Sunday, 1 week before the scheduled start of peace talks between rival political factions. The bombings targeted the headquarters of Yemen's armed forces in Houthi rebel-held Sana'a. Multilateral negotiations are scheduled to begin June 14th in Geneva. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi sealed a landmark agreement with Bangladesh to exchange tiny enclaves where thousands of people from both countries have been trapped for decades. Anjana Pasricha has more.
About 50,000 people have been living in miserable conditions in the more than 160 enclaves for decades. Now each country will administer the enclaves in its territory, and their residents will be allowed to choose where they want to live. This will enable them to gain legal access to public services, such as schools and hospitals, for the first time. The land boundary agreement solves a problem that has lingered on since colonial days. After signing the pact in Dhaka, Prime Minister Modi compared the agreement with the dismantling of the Berlin Wall. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Israeli military says it carried out an airstrike in the northern Gaza Strip in response to a rocket fired from Hamas-controlled territory into southern Israel. No casualties were reported Sunday from either strike. Voters in Luxembourg Sunday rejected a referendum on giving voting rights to foreign-born residents. About 80% of voters cast a no ballot, many saying they feared losing political and economic influence to foreign-born nationals who make up close to half of the country's population. Had the referendum passed, Luxembourg would have been the first European Union member to grant foreign nationals who are not citizens the right to vote in national elections. A new worldwide survey on climate change shows almost 80% of people are very concerned about the impact of global warming and say all nations should do their part to stop it. The poll, taken in 79 countries by a group calling itself Worldwide Views on Climate and Energy, 70% say fighting global warming is a global responsibility that requires an international treaty. 80% said their home countries should take steps to cure it. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's military says it controls the country's remaining productive oil fields.
The rebels claim it's false, misleading information to mislead the world that they are controlling oil fields. That is a lie. SPLF forces are in control in Unity State.
Colonel Philip Agua is the spokesman for South Sudan's military. Meanwhile, the on and off again South Sudan peace talks are expected to resume sometime this week. An ethno-Ethiopian rebel group is optimistic about talks with the government. And Guinea's opposition parties are expecting a letter today from the government as a precondition for the pre-election talks.
We just want to go to dialogue, but we want to be sure that the Electoral Commission will stop some works about the electoral process during this period of 2 or 3 days. We'll have a dialogue. And for that, the government have to send us a letter.
Sidya Touré is leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party. The son of Zimbabwe's first lady is found guilty for killing a pedestrian. And phase one of an Ebola vaccine trial is promising in Kenya. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's military says its forces are in control of the oil fields in Unity and Upper Nile states, contrary to rebel claims that they captured the fields after heavy fighting. Rebel spokesman James Gardet Dag said last Friday the rebels had taken control of the two oil fields as part of a plan to close down production in the country's two remaining oil-producing states. But Army spokesman Colonel Philip Agua says the rebels are engaged in disseminating false and misleading information.
The rebels, from the very beginning, have a target of sabotaging or destroying or occupying the oil field, both in Unity State and Upper Nile. In Upper Nile, they have failed their attempt to advance towards oil field of Baloch. Was frustrated in Malut when they were destroyed and defeated in Malakal. In Unity State, the rebels have been trying to hold on Tarjas. They were defeated in Tarjas, and the SPLF forces are in control of Tarjas. And the rebel again tried on the 5th of this month to occupy Unity oil field north of Bentiu. Again, they were defeated, and the SPLF is in control of Unity oil field. So the rebels claim it's false, misleading information to mislead the world that they are controlling oil fields. That is a lie.
What the rebels say they are trying to do is to deny your government the use of the oil fields, which they claim your government is using to buy more weapons instead of helping the people of South Sudan.
Well, since the eruption of this war, the exploitation of oil in Unity States has stopped. That is the reality. And the government is not using the oil field in Unity State because the rebels have killed, from the very beginning, engineers and some workers. That forced the companies to pull out of Unity State. That was the act of destruction and part of the plans of the rebel to destroy towns and oil installations. So that part of South Sudan where the oil had been functioning is not functioning. It stopped because of insecurity, but the oil fields in Upper Nile are operational, and the rebels have been trying to stop it or sabotage it, but they have failed.
Colonel, does your government still stand by its claim that Khartoum is supporting the rebels who are loyal to the former vice president? Because Khartoum has denied that.
Definitely. Khartoum will never convince anybody because the rebels of Riek Machar have offices in Khartoum. They are getting their training there. And the recent attack in Upper Nile, in a place called Gabad, west of Shulu Kingdom, the rebel got their supplies from the north. One of the trucks that were captured on the 5th, just 3 days ago, was coming with ammunition and food from Khartoum and is now under SPLA. SPLA occupied it in a place called Wedekona. It's a reality, it's not a claim. We have a lot of evidence of Khartoum supplying ammunition, dropping weapon and ammunition in areas that are controlled by the rebels.
Colonel Philip Agua is the spokesman for South Sudan's military. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. The on and off again talks between South Sudan's government and rebels, led by former Vice President Riek Machar, are expected to resume sometime this week in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. The last round of talks ended in early March this year without an agreement. Charlton Doki spoke with President Salva Kiir's spokesman, Aten Wek Aten, about the game plan to make this round of talks successful.
Aten says the number of negotiators at the table in Addis Ababa will be greatly reduced from previous rounds of peace talks mediated by regional bloc IGAD.
The peace talks are going to start on the 8th of this month between the two, you know, ship negotiators plus other two from each warring party. They will meet in Addis Ababa. From there, what they will agree on is what the IGAD summit of the head of state and governments would actually take, and have a summit on South Sudan.
Aten says he expects the IGAD heads of state summit to be held around June 11th or 12th, but says the exact date has yet to be confirmed.
The summit will be after 10th, around 11 or 12th. It has not yet been confirmed. The summit will be an extraordinary summit for the head of state and government of IGAD.
The talks in Addis Ababa will not include the so-called former political detainees, a dozen high-ranking SPLM members who were detained in Juba in December 2013 when fighting erupted out in the capital. They were accused of plotting a coup against Mr. Kiir and held for several weeks before being released to the custody of officials in Kenya. This week, a group of five former detainees traveled to Juba for talks with President Kiir on unifying the SPLM party. Deng Alor, who led the group, says the former detainees support the IGAD-led effort to end the conflict. He says the 18-month conflict has brought shame on South Sudan's leaders.
I think it's about time for us as leaders of SPLM to say enough is enough to war and save our people. We have become a pariah in the region, in Africa, and everywhere. We have shamed our people. We have let down our people. It is true we got them independence, but unfortunately we took them back to war.
The IGAD process is no longer the only effort to restore peace in South Sudan. South Africa's deputy president, Cyril Ramaphosa, who accompanied the former detainees to Juba, says regional leaders are proposing merging talks that started in Arusha, Tanzania last year to reunify South Sudan's ruling party and the peace talks for South Sudan that IGAD has been leading for nearly a year and a half. They believe that this would move the peace process forward more quickly than just IGAD mediation alone. The previous round of IGAD-led talks, which ended on March 6th, were supposed to be the last chance for the warring sides in South Sudan to reach a peace deal. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Guinea's opposition parties say they are expecting a letter today, Monday, from President Alpha Condé's government as a precondition for the resumption of pre-election talks. UN Special Representative for West Africa, Mohamed Ibn Chambas, has been mediating between the government and the opposition to hold presidential election this year as mandated by the constitution. But the opposition has been demanding that the government first hold local elections before the presidential vote. Sidi Touré, leader of the Union of Republican Forces, says the letter they are expecting from the government must include a promise that Guinea's Electoral Commission will stop all election preparations during the period of the talks.
What happened today, we have a meeting with the government to discuss the possibility to start a dialogue. We just want to go to dialogue, but we want to be sure that the Electoral Commission will stop works about the electoral process during this period of 2 or 3 days. We'll have a dialogue. And for that, the government have to send us a letter. We didn't receive this letter yet. It was promised for Monday. So if we receive this letter and we agree with the condition in the letter, so we'll start a dialogue. But nothing has been done before.
You have made certain demands with the government. What are you going to be talking about?
First thing is to be sure that this electoral commission will be, you know, reinforced. Second one is to be sure that those elections about the mayor will find a solution with the international community. And the third one is about the electoral list. Last weeks, we absolutely been everywhere, and we put it on YouTube. Most people are putting on the list, you know, young guys, about 11, 12, the whole part of the northern part of Guinea. And this is very, very complicated because we see it. We have some pictures about that. And this is the third point we'll have to solve with the government during this discussion if we start it.
So what about your demand previously about the holding of local government elections before presidential election?
Which is the second point, I said, mayors and local elections.
So you still stand on that position?
Absolutely.
Mr. Toure, do you think the opposition is singing with one tune here, or are you on different grounds?
No, we have the same tune about both questions, you know, because it's a question relative to have a free and fair election.
There are some people who say that, the inability to create some political stability may make it difficult for Guinea to get rid of the Ebola virus that has been plaguing your country.
You know, we have a very bad governance in this country, you know. We continue to say that since the regime of Alpha Condé put in place. If those people cannot have a capacity to lead this country, if you have a crisis like Ebola crisis, they cannot solve it. Because we are the last country in the sub-region, we cannot give a satisfaction in both results. This is the reality of Guinea, but it's the reality of Alpha Condé's government.
So what should the Guinean people expect today, Monday? Are you expecting to get that letter from the government to hopefully begin the talks?
I don't think really so, because Alpha Condé is playing with his electoral problem. It's an opportunity to him not to have a discussion about the result of his five-year mandate.
Sidi Ouattara is the leader of the Opposition Union of Republican Forces Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 8th. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. The ethnic Somalic rebel group in Ethiopia, known as the Ogaden National Liberation Front, or the ONLF, is expressing optimism about negotiations with the Ethiopian government to end more than 20 years of conflict. The ONLF says the outcome of last month's Ethiopian elections means the government has a mandate to address some of their concerns. ONL Foreign Secretary and Chief Negotiator Abdi Rahman Sheikh Mahdi says his group hopes to narrow down the differences in the ongoing Kenya-sponsored talks.
Well, so far, there has been some positive signs, including the release of these two abducted negotiators, and we have been actually working very hard to go over many differences, and it seems that the differences are being worked on, and there's a hope of narrowing them. And because now the Ethiopian election has now finished, we hope the new leadership has got now a new mandate so that they can actually address some of the concerns of our sides.
Last time the talks have stalled because apparently you refused to recognize the Ethiopian constitution, and on the other hand, they came up with some conditions. Has there been any progress on this front?
First of all, the issue was, it was when we first met and we had our first modalities, the agreement was that there will be no conditionality, that we will come with a clean slate. We were refusing the conditionality. As for the Ethiopian constitution, we have many times said the Ethiopian constitution is approved by people through referendum. So the Ogaden people should be asking. That's our general view. But also we have been consulting with a lot of experts on these issues, and there has been a lot of, you know, well-wishers who are trying to find a common ground to overcome that issue. And I think we have found a formula where we can overcome that issue.
What would be an ideal common ground?
Well, an ideal common ground would be to look at what we both want. We both have our own interests on both sides. We have got, you know, some common interests. We have got some common grounds where we can start with, and then put the differences on the back and initially start with the common grounds we can develop.
So the release of the two negotiators, does that show that Ethiopia is ready for negotiated settlement with ONLF?
Well, we cannot exactly say that. That shows that they are ready for negotiations. But what we can say, that is a positive development that may contribute to coming together from both sides. But what the Ethiopian government will decide, I cannot you know, predict from here. But in general, this has been a very positive step, and we believe it may lead to a new development.
So tell us about the nature and the formality of the talks that are taking place at the moment, and when do you see these talks might become fruitful?
Well, at the moment, there are no talks. There are some dialogues and some shuttle diplomacy. The Kenyan government is doing its best to gather ideas from both sides. We're exchanging ideas, but there's no formal talks between us now.
Abdi Rahman Sheikh Mahdi is Foreign Secretary and Chief Negotiator of the Ogaden National Liberation Front Rebels. He spoke with Haroon Maruf of U.S. Somali Service. Initial results from phase one trials of an experimental Ebola vaccine known as RVSV-Zibov have shown that the vaccine is safe and generates an immune response against the deadly Ebola virus. Lenny Ruvanga has more from Kilifi, Kenya.
30-year-old Munga Mochiro goes about his daily duties in a matter-of-fact manner. He's an occupational health nurse and has been working at the KEMRI Wellcome Trust Research Program in Kilifi for the last 2 years. His job includes safety preparedness and visiting patients in nearby villages. And he's one of 40 volunteers participating in the Phase 1 Ebola vaccine trials. Today, Mochiro is drawing up plans to visit the villages. 5 months ago, he was given the experimental Ebola vaccine as part of a process to prepare for its use in Kenya when necessary. He says he's participating in the trials to help humanity find a cure.
Due to the fear of Ebola and misconceptions about it, and I being a healthcare practitioner, I thought it was a great thing to assist in finding a solution to this epidemic.
Trials of RVSV-Zibov began last December in Kilifi and 3 other sites in Switzerland, Germany and Gabon. Scientists at the Canadian National Microbiology Laboratory developed the experimental Ebola vaccine, which was cleared for clinical trials last year by the World Health Organization. Dr. Patricia Njuguna, a clinical researcher and pediatrician, is the lead scientist tasked with developing the phase one trials in Kenya. For the last 8 years, she has been involved in various vaccine trials for other diseases, including malaria. The Ebola epidemic broke out in Guinea more than a year ago and spread to Liberia and Sierra Leone, killing more than 11,000 people. Dr. Njuguna says the positive results from the participants in Kenya could herald new insights into the search for a cure.
The participant is vaccinated and the immune system picks up the vaccine as a foreign component in the body. It breaks it down into little pieces and the immune system develops antibodies to the vaccine. And this is what we measure to see that you're responding to the vaccine.
Liberia was recently declared Ebola-free, but a rise in new cases in Guinea has led to fears that the virus could re-emerge. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Kilifi, Kenya.
In Zimbabwe, the son of First Lady Grace Mugabe was Friday found guilty of killing a pedestrian a few months back. Thomas Cheripasi has details from Harare.
Russell Goreraza, the son of Mrs. Mugabe and her first husband, was arraigned before a Harare magistrate to face charges of culpable homicide. Prosecutor Venenzia Mutake told the court that on February 23 this year, Russell was driving his BMW in Harare Central Business District when he knocked down an unidentified pedestrian who died on the spot. The state attorney said the first lady's 31-year-old son was overspeeding, resulting in him failing to apply emergency brakes to avoid the accident. Goreraza, who spent a night at Roseville Police Station, pleaded guilty to the charge and immediately apologized for causing the death of the unidentified pedestrian. Magistrate Vakai Chikwekwe then ordered Goreraza to pay a fine of $800 or alternatively spend 2 months in jail. The magistrate said he was lenient on the accused person because he was never convicted before, adding that he was the custodian of his minor child following his divorce with his wife. Coalition Against Corruption Director Terry Mutwanga said the non-disclosure of the deceased person's identity in court is suspicious.
I think the judicial system has been compromised given the magnitude of the case. The name of the deceased has not been disclosed, and we think that the sentence is too lenient.
Mutwanga said this puts a dent on the first family's image.
Obviously, the image has been dented. If it was something that was done in a transparent manner, the name of the deceased was supposed to be said in court.
This is almost the first time in the history of culpable homicide cases that a deceased person under such road accidents has not been identified. Police spokesperson Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba was not reachable for comment. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. Kenyan Julius Yego won the javelin with a throw of 91.39 meters, the furthest throw in over 9 years at the IAAF Diamond League in Birmingham, Britain on Sunday. It's an African and Diamond League meet record. South African Wade Van Niekerk won the 300 meters in 31.63 meters, another African record. Kenya's James Magut and Thomas Longosiwa won the 1500 meters and 5000 meters respectively. Botswana's Nigel Amos and Kenyan Eunice Sum triumphed in men's and women's 800 meters as Virginia Nyambura won women's 3,000 meters steeplechase. In France, Morocco's Abdelati Igida won men's 1,500 meters in 3 minutes and 32.88 seconds, the world's quickest time in the event this year at the Tour of Marseille meet on Saturday. Morocco's Rababi Arafi and Ivory Coast's Marie-José Lou Goneri won women's 1,500 meters and 100 meters respectively as Zambian Kabanga Mupopo was second in women's 400 meters. Turning to football, tournament debutants Ivory Coast suffered a humiliating 10-0 defeat against Germany, the world's top-ranked team, at the FIFA Women's World Cup in Ottawa, Canada on Sunday. Today, Monday, African champions Nigeria face Sweden in Winnipeg as Cameroon engage Ecuador in Vancouver. In New Zealand, Africans at the men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup achieved an unprecedented feat when they all qualified for the second round. On Sunday, Nigeria beat Hungary 2-0 in New Plymouth. Early on Saturday, tournament debutants Senegal edged Qatar 2-1. Mali and Uruguay drew 1-1 as Ghana pipped Panama 1-0 on Friday. Meanwhile, Zambia pipped Ethiopia 1-0 in a friendly in Addis Ababa on Sunday. Kenya beat South Sudan 2-0 and Rwanda dismissed Tanzania 2-0. On Saturday, Equatorial Guinea edged Andorra 1-0. Rwanda and Kenya drew 0-0. Niger edged Gabon 2-1. Mali and Libya drew 2-2 as Cameroon pipped Burkina Faso 3-2. Today, Monday, Egypt host Malawi as Ghana faced Togo. In golf, Zambia won the Eastern Central Africa Women's Golf Challenge in Lilongwe, Malawi. Uganda placed second ahead of Kenya, then Malawi. Finally, in table tennis, the ITTF World Junior Circuit competition starts in Cairo, Egypt today, Monday. The contest features Algeria, Botswana, India, Iraq, Jordan, Kuwait, Nigeria, Qatar, Romania, Saudi Arabia, Slovakia, Togo, Tunisia, and hosts Egypt. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, June 8th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. May I please use your medium to call on Amnesty International to stop accusing Nigerian military of bad crime against humanity on the fight against Boko Haram. Otherwise, we Nigerians will stop accusing them for being Boko Haram sponsors. Albert Alago, former Kudu Kato Ranch, Betray 1, in Obaniku local government here in Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A new worldwide survey on climate change shows nearly 80% of people are very concerned about the impact of global warming, and they say all nations should do their part to stop it. And that's it for this Monday, June 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a productive week, Africa.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee it.
African music
hits. Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African music mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.